Welcome to Put Simply, the podcast that puts what's happening in the world simply without compromising on the details. Erdem Koç is my name, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ozan İbrişim. Ozan, good to see you after the, well, I guess the Northern Hemisphere summer break. How are you doing?
Indeed. Yes, we haven't done one of these for a while. It's been a long break, but great to be back. I think we've got to apologize to our army of thousands, if not 10,000s of fans who have been kind of without our services of putting things simply for them. But we promised to make that up, and we promised to make it up with a brand new format.
Yes, so the format that we had done, I guess, until today was having guests from all around the world to talk a little bit about what is happening in their part of the world. We touched on topics like AI, we touched on topics like wellness and mindfulness, and of course, elections, given that 2024 is an election year. Those will continue, but on a more sort of weekly and more regular basis, we want to dissect the news a little bit more and a little bit more conversation around what's happening. And Ozan, it's not going to be just our Australian accents on air. It's one of the feedbacks that we've received that apparently we're too Australian. So given our extreme accents, we've added someone who has a more moderate accent, and that's Rodney McCune, who joins us. And we know who Rodney because he's spoken twice on this podcast, I believe, one on some of the issues facing both Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, and more recently on the UK election. But Rodney, I'll let you introduce yourself. Welcome to Put Simply, my friend.
Thanks, guys. It's good to be involved again, and I'm not sure that I've ever had the description of having a moderate accent, so I appreciate that as well. I take that as a wonderful, glowing compliment. As you guys know, I've been working in governments both in the UK and in the Middle East for a number of years, and I've also got a long-standing experience of campaigning UK general elections. So those are the areas which, of course, I will be most interested in, but I've never been shy to offer a view or an opinion on other areas too. So looking forward to today's chat.
Well, forget your accent, mate. I don't think you've been described as a moderate ever, have you?
It's something that I've aspired to over a long period of time, but yet to achieve.
Well, let's start right there, Rodney, in the UK, because speaking of moderates, if that's what you want to call them, the Labour Party have gathered in Liverpool for their conference. And well, Prime Minister Starmer made a bit of an embarrassing slip of the tongue, and it wasn't exactly something that you'd want to do in the context of what he was talking about.
Yeah, he called for a return of the sausages in the context of Israeli hostages in Gaza, which has been widely reported. I think in the first time I read it was prior to going to listen to the speech this morning. I read it in the South China Morning Post. So this is a proper global story of return of the sausages, which is a terrible shame, because since Labour won the election with a landslide, they've encountered a number of difficult issues. They've been criticised for failing to set a proper vision for how they were going to go forward. This was a real opportunity yesterday for him to do that at party conference. And I'm sure listeners will know that UK party conference happens in a few weeks of recess, parliamentary recess in the September-October period, where parties will get together with their membership and set out the direction, as well as energise their parties for the year ahead. He actually gave a pretty good speech, but for the sausages comment, and that's the one that we're going to hear about again and again and again, I'm afraid.
It was kind of mixed between applause in that moment. Like, he could have actually got away with it, but I don't know, man. It's one of those things that, you know, politicians are human, and, you know, we understand slip of the tongues happen all the time, but it's just one of those things that you don't want to get wrong. Like, of all words in the world and the sensitivities around what's happening, it wasn't a good look for someone who should have really been, you know, to your point, energizing and whatnot. But Ozan, you said that you got to about 5 minutes of the speech before you died from boredom.
Yeah, I think I had a stroke from boredom was my precise comments. Look, I think it was a boring speech. He's in a very difficult position because he's come in and like many other kind of incumbents after being out of government for a very long time. You know, you've come in on the promises of fixing things up, you know, but he hasn't really done a very good job of actually setting the narrative on what it is that he's trying to fix up, and then you know, outlining what his solutions are. You've got to give the guy a break. I think he's you know, it's only been 3-4 months. He's been hit with race riots and all sorts of, you know, difficulties with somewhat trivial kind of scandals around perks and what have you, and you know, the pay grade of his chief of staff, etc. These at, I think, normal times would be trivial, but obviously the conservative press is going pretty hard against him, and you know, they're trying to really rattle his kind of first 6 months, or I suppose first year in power, and you know, unfortunately he's not off to a good start. And I've got to say, though, I mean, I don't know how much this sausages comment is going to get traction. We've just come off the back of a you know, the most powerful man in the world pausing for 5 minutes during debates, not realizing what he's saying, killing off Medicare when he's trying to save it. Like, I think people's tolerance on this stuff are probably a bit high. You know, Starmer's probably a good 30 years younger than or 20 odd years younger than Biden, I would think. But I think he's really got, you know, besides that, he's got a lot of work to do to kind of define what it is that he's trying to do, what the problem that he's trying to solve is, and how he's going to solve it. I mean, it just, to me, it comes down to that. There's no narrative. They're really struggling with the narrative.
What is with the Western world and struggling with narratives? I mean, it becomes such a common theme of elections, and we look to leaders for leadership and, you know, policy and strategy, and it just doesn't seem to be happening all that much. I mean, it's the same in the US, which we're going to get to a little bit later. It's the same in Australia, similar, you know, conversations in Canada. So much of the Western world this is the exact conversation. You could just replicate the conversation we're having now and just insert the other names from the other countries. And it seems to be this ongoing, you know, conversation about a lack of narrative, a lack of clear sort of policies to take the country forward. And, well, let's face it, every poll around the world, you know, people say the country is going in the wrong direction. So there's something that needs to be done. But what did you like about the speech generally, Rodney? Because you said it was a good one.
Yeah, look, I think he set out clarity on, as he called it, his missions around safer streets, which is good because it's an area that Conservatives would have historically been perceived as stronger on in terms of policing, higher growth. So again, playing into the economy, but also on clean energy. And he made an announcement that Great Britain Energy, GB Energy, the new national energy company, would be based in Aberdeen. So again, there was a nod to Scotland and the regions, and of course, healthier societies, which is for many countries in the West, the long-term solution to pressures on public health services. And then around creating opportunities. So he had five themes. He set those out. And actually, that's a bit which has been missing from what the government has been doing and saying over the past period of time. The area which I think he should be concerned about is that the stuff around donations, the pay grade of the senior advisor, Sue Gray, are things that to an extent, maybe around donations and clothing allowances and so on, is the right-wing media, but certainly around the pay stuff, it's internal. So there is potentially a lack of unity at the top of the Labour government, which is something that should be troubling so early on. However, and perhaps these clarity around these visions will start to bind people together and give them that sense of purpose to get on with the job.
Do you think, Rodney, he's actually fitting to the role? Because I've got to say, like, when he first came out, did the King's speech, you know, he kind of looked prime ministerial, if you ask me. But I don't know. He seems uneasy about fitting into that role. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, and you know, I have been a big fan of him, and I think he ran a good campaign, etc. But yeah, I think there's just something there that I can't kind of put my finger on. But he's just not looking very relaxed in the job.
So he's not exciting. He doesn't have a warmth and charisma. His voice is really what it is. but it's not one of those voices which grabs your attention. He is a prosecutor, a little bit like Kamala Harris. They're there because they're more competent than the alternative. They're more likely to be technocratic, and there's a level of competence, but there's also a level of boredom that sometimes comes across with how he presents himself and how he speaks. And you said yourself that you switched off after a few minutes. I mean, part of me had hoped that the sausages comment would have been one of those court games that certainly when I was a trial lawyer, we did play from time to time, either with the jailers or with other lawyers, where you had to fit a word into your closing speech to the jury. I should say I never played it because that might be, but I'm aware that others did, but it was never a game for the prosecutors. And it would have been, to fit in some obscure word and so on. And perhaps I'd hoped in some small way that he had someone had bet him a new shirt that, given the clothing scandal, that he would try to fit sausages into his speech. But he couldn't have chosen a worse point to have that error, which he, of course, quickly corrected, which, and again, in a way, highlighted it.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
mean, it's just terribly unfortunate. People do make mistakes. We've all trained people on giving speeches and public speaking. I do wonder whether, and certainly I've seen this before, when it comes to the area where people are most concerned, or there's a sensitivity that they're more likely to make a mistake. And, what's happening in the Middle East is a pressure point for the Labour Party and internal within the Labour Party. And I wonder whether that added anxiety potentially on getting those lines right in a way led to the mistake.
Well, I was drinking every time I heard the word sausage, so that's the little game we were playing. I was pretty sober by the end of it. Anyway, I think this goes back to what type of society we've become. Like, it just everyone has 5 minutes to kind of everything is now an elevator pitch. It's kind of you look at Thatcher, for example, and Rodney, you'd know this better than me, but she really struggled in her first year. She was also, I think, from my recollections, trying to bring about some seriously bold reforms, quite unpopular reforms from in certain segments of the community, et cetera. But I don't think she had that this much pressure on her because things were almost much more going slowly, in terms of we were not basically bombarded with social media, the 24-hour media cycle, et cetera. Now everyone wants everything done perfectly today. And this is, I think, coming back to what you were saying, Adam, that most leaders are struggling with this because politics is not geared. Politics is not made to be able to get big things done. If you want to get attention in this world, you've got to run around like Marjorie Taylor Greene or others and talking about eating pets, etc. This is what gets attention, not bold reforms that are going to make serious impact and benefit, serious kind of seriously benefit people's lives. This stuff is boring. So yeah, and it takes time. It takes effort. So I think this is why a lot of the fact that leaders are not, able to put their narrative forward. I don't believe for a second that the people that we're talking about haven't spent hours and hours working on their narrative and figuring it out. I just don't think they, the media climate lends itself to be able to communicate a serious narrative very easily. And that's a big problem in our political discourse.
Yeah, I don't think people want seriousness, to be honest. Like, from a sort of media, social media perspective, I think people want inspiration, right? They want their leaders to come out and speak in a way. Like, if you think back to Obama, right, and when Obama sort of accepted the presidential nomination, and then had those sort of two or three really key speeches, including on election night. That's the sort of rhetoric that people want, and you're sort of seeing in the US now the Harris camp trying to replicate some of that. But I mean, that's not cutting through because I think of the way the difference in how Kamala Harris communicates versus how Barack Obama communicates is extraordinary, that difference there. And to Rodney's point, Starmer doesn't have a very good voice, a very inspiring voice, and I think that is the issue, which then is then misconstrued as there's a lack of narrative, or it's misconstrued as a, well, this guy doesn't really know what he's talking about, which I think nothing could be further from the truth, right? And that is why I think, not necessarily in this election campaign, but the previous election, or rather the one before that, 2016, the Make America Great Again slogan actually worked so well for Donald Trump, because it was simple, it was clear, it wasn't exactly, you know, we'll make America great again, okay, from what, we didn't know. But Obama was no different in 2008, he campaigned on hope. Like, he campaigned on change. And sure, there were policies, but no one would tell you what his policies were, the average voter. They would just go, well, he's different and we'll have our first black president and et cetera, et cetera. And that, for example, in the US is not cutting through with Kamala Harris either. And I think as a result, she's probably not where she should have been in the polls by now against Donald Trump.
So I think there's obviously a challenge around being female in what is a society that looks to the, as they call it, commander-in-chief, not the prime minister, not the head of state, but the commander-in-chief as a very much a male role. So she's always going to have some level of disadvantage because of the society that America is. And, you know, it's not unique in that. But I think she has a much more difficult task simply by being female, because there is this underlying prejudice.
Also, she's up against somebody who really knows how to navigate and, you know, play in the whole new media kind of environment that we've got. You know, you can criticize Trump for a lot of things, but he's the ultimate entertainer, and you know, his number one strength is to steal the oxygen and what have you. And I mean, you're coming back to what you were saying, Adam, like I think a lot of this is due to many, many people and a growing number of people, particularly younger people, getting their politics and their news about politics and their leaders, et cetera, from social media, from 30-second video clips. You know, it's very difficult to make an articulate argument about your energy policy in a 30-second video while, you know, you've got some song in the background, you know, this is not going to catch anyone's attention. So we've programmed ourselves, and the younger generation have programmed themselves to get their news from these sources. Therefore, these sources, you know, the only thing that's appealing through these sources are kind of leaders being able to show very quickly certain characteristics that would then make the audience believe that they're a good leader. And this is very difficult to do. This is what entertainers do, not politicians.
Yeah, you're judged on your ability to dance for 5 seconds on TikTok rather than your political position. And you know, it's all about profile, right? Profile is more important than competence when it comes to people deciding who they're planning to vote for in some of these electoral contests. And that's what's driving it. However, when you look at Mark Robinson in America, who was a social media star, Ozan and Nerdem, you will both recognize that these types of quasi-celebrity candidates do have their limitations when people start realizing that because of their success on social media, they hadn't properly vetted them, or they hadn't properly interrogated their fitness for office. So there is still a ceiling in terms of how far these people can go with reality checking them at some point.
We shouldn't assume that everybody knows who Mark Robinson is. I'll give you the pleasure of Rodney going through his CV and his greatest hits.
I'm happy to share. He was the popular through social media, evangelical style. Had previously got himself into trouble through comments on abortion and misogyny in related to that. He then, of course, found himself reported in recent days as having been posting on the comments section of a pornography website where he had described himself as a black Nazi. He had espoused some merits of slavery. I think he is said to have gone so far as to think if slavery were reintroduced, he'd probably have a few himself. He also said he would have preferred Hitler to Obama, which again was quite a phenomenal statement. He was handpicked and endorsed by Trump. Trump hasn't withdrawn his endorsement of him. He's had his campaign team en masse desert him and resign. He's now replaced those people in terms of his headcount with a team of lawyers, clearly to try and negotiate himself out of the difficulties he's in, probably to get to the point where at least it can't be proven, although we can't properly say that it wasn't him. And JD Vance has summed it up by saying, "Well, I don't. I'm not saying I don't believe him, but I'm not saying I do either." In respect of his denials, Trump was in North Carolina yesterday, and he didn't have him anywhere near him, although he hasn't withdrawn his endorsement. But the Republican Party in North Carolina has lined up with some enthusiasm to denounce him as a candidate. So the longer Trump, in my view, holds on to him, the more potential damage it'll do. He does not need to be associated with this guy in the coming weeks. I think there was a piece in The Guardian today in relation to it, and Mark Robinson had described himself as a perv. I think he had said that he had some voyeuristic tendencies as well. And I think the Guardian, this is UK Guardian, the line was something like sex offender defends perv or refuses to withdraw endorsement for perv. I mean, that is not what either Trump or indeed Mark Robinson need in North Carolina, which is an important state, although Trump's up at the minute.
Well, particularly when Trump is, labeled him as Martin Luther King on steroids. I mean,
More like Martin Luther King on Viagra, reading some of his comments, Susan.
anyway, so let's get on to U.S. politics.
Well, and looking at those swing states that you mentioned there, Rodney, North Carolina is obviously one of them. Some of the other key ones, obviously Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan. There is no state in the polls where any candidate is up by more than 2 points, which is basically then means that if those swing states are sort of locked at the moment in a bit of a deadlock from a polling perspective, we just don't know where the election could go, and it could literally go either way very, very quickly. But Ozan, what do you think of Harris's performance in those states particularly, as well as overall, and can she turn things around to her advantage between now and polling day?
Well, I think none of us thought that Harris would pull it off like she has over the last 2 months. When there was discussion post the debate about replacing Biden, there were many people talking about how Harris is so unpopular, even more unpopular than Biden, etc. She has done a phenomenal job turning that around, and she's taken this race from an almost certain loss to now she's really, really, really, really in the race with a very, very decent chance. So I think if you look at the polls, I think the polls are a little bit all over the place. The New York kind of Siena poll, which is considered as quite a credible poll, has the race tied as of 2-3 days ago at the national level. But then obviously they look at, the national polls don't mean a great deal because at the end of the day, it comes down, as you mentioned, to 6-7 battleground states where the candidates need to win those to ensure that they can get enough electoral college votes. For those listeners that may not know how elections run in the US, it's not a popular vote that gets you to become president. It's you've got to get to 270 electoral votes, and each state allocates electoral votes. Big states like California have a quite large number of votes. I think 40 something, could be 50. Don't quote me. Other smaller states have 3 or 4. So it's really about winning all of those. But there's really about 100, 150,000 people that are spread across those seven states, which are Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. These are the seven states that are going to really define or kind of decide who wins. Now, some interesting stuff has happened, though. I mean, you might have been following Trump and Senator Lindsey Graham have been working very hard over the last couple of weeks to try and change a law that's been in place in Nebraska for some time. And what that law would mean is that if the Republicans won the state of Nebraska, which they will 99% do, all of those votes that are available, all those electoral college votes, should go to the winner of that. Right now, the way the system works is one vote from one of the congressional districts in Omaha is up for grabs, separate from the electoral college votes of the rest of the state. So typically what happens is the Republicans win the state and the Democrats have got a very good chance to win that one vote. Now, why is one vote important? You kind of have to look at how close this election race is, but it's important because if Harris wins Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, three states where she has a pretty reasonable chance of winning, then that one vote gets her to 270. Without that one vote in Nebraska, and if Trump and his Republican allies were able to, you know, 50 days out of the election, were able to rig that whole system and make it so that whoever wins the states gets all those votes, then she could only get to 269. Now, apparently one of the state senators in Nebraska, who's based in Omaha, is holding out, and it doesn't look like they'll get that change. But just to give you context, like, this is how tight it is. They're talking about one electoral vote out of 538, so 39. So, you know, this is how tight it is. I think there's been some concern about how Harris is doing in, you know, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia. These are known as the Sunbelt states. I think, you know, one of the polls had her had Trump actually up from the New York Siena poll up 5 points. The same poll before the debate had Harris up 5 points. So that was 2 weeks ago. And then in between, we've had debates and people eating pets, etc. So the polls are a little bit over all over the place. If you look at the average polls, she's up about 2.3%, I think it is, in the Real Clear Politics averages. She needs to get up to 4 or 5% at the national level to kind of win in those states. And I think she can do it. I mean, as long as Trump continues to talk about, crazy stuff like people eating cats and dogs, he's basically become the butt of all jokes on TikTok. And this really is not good for him. And, you know, he's standing behind a guy who self-identifies as a black Nazi. He told a Jewish audience over the weekend that if he loses, it'll be largely their fault because, you know, they won't be voting for him in large enough numbers. And this was actually at a anti-Semitism rally. And then, you know, it's taken on Taylor Swift. I mean, sending out a Truth Social saying, "I hate Taylor Swift." Like, it's you can't make this stuff up. So if he continues doing this, I think she's got a reasonable chance. She needs to keep going on, on message and let him kind of self explode.
Is that right, Rodney? I mean, does any of this stuff matter? Because Trump's base is Trump's base, and there's a lot of people in the US that love him. I mean, we've seen some extraordinarily outrageous stuff and weird things. Two assassination attempts is, you know, overnight he's been briefed that Iran's trying to kill him. Like, it in the context of all of that, is it true what Ozan says around, you know, Trump keeps being Trump and Harris keeps being Harris, then that poll gap is going to widen? Or is it just the reality of the US voter base and the people who will come out in enough numbers to vote for Trump, particularly in those swing states, that will get him over the line?
I mean, I agree with Ozan in terms of the evidence that's coming through in the polling as a split between the Rust Belt, Sun Belt states, and that Harris is struggling there. I honestly don't think there's any gaffe or extreme statement that Trump could make that would really eat into his base in any way. And therefore, the margin is the middle ground where Harris is pitching on competence and, you know, through the debate performance and other set pieces, she's given the impression that she is a potential president, which some people wouldn't have thought when the switch was made between Biden and her as the candidate not that long ago, when the Democrats were very far behind in the polls. And the fact that they've closed the gap in the way that they have is incredibly impressive. However, it hasn't guaranteed any particular outcome. You know, Biden carried Georgia and Arizona in 2020. The economy still is the biggest issue in the states that Trump is ahead. And although he feels again and again to press home his advantage on the economy, given that Harris is part of the Biden administration, and fails to really land a blow on her in terms of immigration, he is doing what he's doing. He'll continue to do what he does. He'll continue to carry those people who have supported him with him. That is a large number of electors in the US. And she'll continue to try and build the case for competency and build the case for being a credible alternative to what people seem to have forgotten, which was the chaos of his previous time or term as president. But he can make mistake after mistake after mistake, and it'll have no adverse impact on his vote. She only has to make one mistake, one big mistake, or a gaffe, and it'll hand the election to Trump. So every time Harris goes out, she has to get it right. She did that with the debate, but there's going to be more and more occasions when something could go wrong. Had Harris made the sausages comment, it would have bitten in the US in a way that I think it'll blow over for Starmer in the UK.
Yeah, it's a good point, isn't it? I mean, God, imagine if she said that, and imagine the backlash there. She's getting out more and more. She did the Oprah interview, and I know that's a, yeah, it's a celebrity interview, whatever, but it's all about momentum, and it's all about energizing the base and getting people out to vote, right? She's obviously done one sit-down media interview by herself, and no doubt there'll be more sort of coming. Is there going to be a second debate, Ozan?
Well, I mean, I think overnight or 2 days ago, he's again told a crowd that it's apparently too late to have a second debate, which is a little bit funny because the second debate between him and Biden in 2020 was October 22nd or something. So the proposed second debate that's been organized this time around by CNN is October 23rd. So again, just, you know, he's coming up with any kind of excuse not to have that debate. I think he'd be mad if he didn't go on debate. Like, I think if, you know, there's going to come a time in I think 2 weeks, if he continues, as Rodney said, to vacate the field on immigration, economy, etc., and just completely talk about dumb stuff, then his internal polling, his people are going to start telling him that you're losing, and he's going to feel it too. I think he's going to feel that he's losing. So I would be very surprised if we didn't have a debate, to be honest. I think he will realize that he's got nothing to lose and go out there and debate the vice president again. You know, but again, she's the one that's got, as Rodney said, as a lot to lose. She has to do another effort that she did. She has to replicate that, and also, you know, go even harder and that's not easy at this level. I think it's, you know, it's going to be a quite risky thing for her, because I've got to assume that Trump probably won't fall for the same tricks again. Well, he may. Who knows? Yeah, I think he will do the debate. And look, the other issue here is, I think there's no it kind of what she's doing is painting a picture of her as being normal, you know, like the rest of the normal Americans, and you know, she's painting a picture that she's there for you know, and she needs to continue doing this. Things like, you know, her she's working at she was growing up and working at McDonald's. They've been doing a lot of ads around just painting that picture, and I think that's really what this comes down to, because, you know, it's just a lot of people in the US, I think, are just sick of this bizarre, weird kind of debate that's going on, has been going on for 10 years, ever since Trump's entered the political landscape. You know, and people want to see someone like them. Now, you might argue that she's kind of a Democrat from California. How much is she like somebody from the Rust Belt, etc.? Sure, but at the same time, less and less people are starting to kind of, in my opinion, relate to someone like Trump. They're certainly not relating to someone like JD Vance. There was a poll where the respondents were asked to rank various different things, such as capitalism, Taylor Swift, and socialism, Project 2025. And it's no wonder or no surprise that JD Vance was also one of those things that they were asked to rank, as was Tim Walz. And Tim Walz was basically 1% ahead of Taylor Swift in terms of popularity. And JD Vance was, basically 10% points ahead of socialism, which I think was, negative 30 or 35. So, and Project 2025 was the most unpopular thing. So you can just see that these sorts of characters, the things that they stand for, Project 2025, they're just wildly unpopular. They're wildly weird. People just can't relate to them. So she has to do that. She has to make sure that people are relating to her. And I think she's doing a reasonable job. She's got a long way to go, but she needs to continue doing that.
So I don't think there will be a second debate. When Trump said one and done, he meant it. Whether that truly reflected the debate is something else. And it was classic Trump to hear him come out and say, it was unfair, but I also won anyway. They were awful to me, but I won. It's only boxers who lose who ask for a rematch. And actually, that seems to be quite a smart way of presenting it to his audience. And there has been some polling of them who suggested that his own supporters don't think he did as bad as what the broader audience have done. I also see that Project 2025 maybe isn't resonating with the public in the same way as a thing, but maybe elements of it are a much better way to get that out there, because it hasn't been used in the same way as, something like 2 months ago, funding in Ukraine and so on was a much heavier political story between Trump and then Biden than it is today. And people are more interested in pets and Springfield and so on. But I did read something, I think yesterday, about the head of the Heritage Foundation, author of 2025, Project 2025, Kevin Roberts, who some of his friends has disclosed killed a neighbor's pet dog with a shovel. So perhaps in the
Yeah.
theme of pets and dogs being pets, dogs, cats, geese being more topical on the US election debate, we'll hear more about Project 2025 off the back of that in the coming days. But quite crazy.
Honestly, things just keep getting weirder and weirder. I don't understand how we land in these positions. Speaking of weird, the Trump campaign also did a huge mistake in its marketing material, where it sort of put up a picture of arguing that people should come out and vote for Georgia, and it had a photo of Georgia in the background on this particular marketing sort of social digital campaign. It was a photo of Georgia, but not the state Georgia, the country of Georgia. And it was beautiful, but I think anyone looking at it would know that it's not the US state of Georgia. I mean, it's extraordinary that these mistakes happen. And it's hilarious of how quickly these things spread to our earlier discussion around social media. And to your point, Rodney, I think, if Harris comes out and makes that mistake, or the Harris camp makes that mistake, it resonates much more than what, if Trump does or the people around him do. Speaking of the issues that sort of really is resonating, obviously the economy is one of the big ones, and also one of the harder ones in terms of a sell. Trump's going out saying, this was the inflation rate when I was president. This was sort of, the cost of your groceries and petrol and mortgage. And then this is what's happened under Biden and Harris, and that will continue if you don't vote for me. But the economy is a topic everywhere. And particularly something that caught your interest this week, Ozan, was what's happening in China. Talk us through that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was yesterday the Chinese government announced a massive stimulus package. As listeners would probably know, China's had some serious headwinds. It's been facing headwinds when it comes to a kind of deflationary pressures. Its level of youth unemployment has been very high, and also a massive debt crisis when it comes to the property sector. So basically, they've come out, a week after the Fed Reserve reduced interest rates, and they've just pumped almost $140 billion of liquidity into the financial market. Now, to put that simply, effectively what it means is they're stimulating amount of money in the economy, which they would hope that would then allow commercial banks to give out mortgages at a lower interest rates, a lower interest rate, benefiting hundreds of millions of people, I would assume. And they've taken a number of other more kind of technical initiatives to, things like swap programs, where a whole bunch of firms can get money or liquidity from the central bank. Again, these are all aimed at trying to revitalize what is a very much an ailing economy. So, of course, these are short-term I won't say Band-Aid solutions, but these are very much short-term solutions to kickstart the economy. I think many people will be looking at what they'll be doing in the longer term to bring about some structural change and some of those much needed structural reforms to the economy of the world's second largest economy. But it's good news. I think it's going to do great things for particularly where we're based in Asia Pacific, for confidence. For the last two or three years, many people had wanted China to rebound from the pandemic. That never eventuated, and you can really feel it when in Asia China's holding back investments significantly down. So hopefully this gives more confidence to investors, consumers, and others. It starts with having some positive impact in the Asia Pacific region.
Is there anything bad about this, Rodney, or is it all good news for the region and beyond?
I mean, it's interesting, and it's the largest stimulus package that China has introduced since the early days of the pandemic. So this is significant. I think what I'm going to be looking to over the next period of time is where it bites in terms of China's ability to continue to use its economic power for foreign policy, both in the region and more, into Central Asia and so on, Belt and Road, and other initiatives that China has been pursuing over a significant period of time, as well as in the Global South. So, how much positive impact is going to come from this significant step, and is it going to allow China to continue to pursue those external policy initiatives that they've been working on over the recent years, or is it going to bite in that, and they're going to have to pare some of that back in some way because of financial constraints? I don't know the answer to that yet. It's very early on, but the fact that they've tried to, or they've had to, introduce such a significant stimulus package is big news.
And I think it's big news also from a political point of view, in that a lot of the economic woes, I think, are putting political pressure on the Chinese government. Some of those things that we're all kind of concerned about around the South China Sea, the US-China relations, etc. These, of course, are very much influenced by some of those domestic economic concerns, domestic economic problems as well. So I think it's a step in the right direction. Hopefully, let's be frank. I mean, a strong Chinese economy is good for everybody. That I think there's no doubt about that. If they can take the first step to strengthening their economy and dealing with some of those problems, I think this is good news.
Well, I think we've come full circle from sausages to stimuli. So, gents, thanks so much for your time this week on Put Simply. See you next.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And that's been this week's episode of Put Simply. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn at Oroku Group to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and news. Feel free to leave a comment and suggestions on what you'd like to see featured on the podcast as well. Until next time, I'm Erdem Koch.
And I'm Ozan Ibrahim.
Thanks for listening.